Pod.
Rugby pod.
Hello and welcome back to the Rugby Pod. I'm Big Jim.
And I'm Goody.
And we're also here with producer Rob. Say hello, Rob.
How are the lads?
There we go. We've got a great show lined up. We're going to be discussing the fallout from Owen Farrell's decision to step away from international rugby for the time being.
We're going to also be looking at the Premiership action and the big talking points from the URC, alongside having a good old chat about the litigation against the WRU, the RFU and World Rugby.
Atta boy. Well, we're also going to be chatting to Munster World Cup winning legend. He's a bit Irish as well, but he's a Springbok second row, Jean Klein. So settle back, peel back, enjoy, and make sure you're subscribed on Spotify.
This episode is brought to you by Cars.com. When you add your car to your garage on Cars.com, you'll unlock access to real-time insights into how much your car is worth. Plus, view its historical and projected value to decide when to sell. So when the time is right, you can secure an instant offer from a local dealership or sell it yourself on Cars.com. Start tracking your car's value with your garage on Cars.com. This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on. I got it to over 200,000 miles because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car. Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit JiffyLube.com.
Producer Rob, did you enjoy your 2 days with myself, Goody, your wee mate Jimmy, and the British Army?
I would say it's generally one of the funniest 2 days I've ever had.
All right, you don't sound like you're that pumped about it. So it was absolutely class.
Yeah, how tired though?
Oh, I was knackered. Well, my flight was cancelled getting home and then delayed the next day, but hey, let's
we'll get
keep
to
it
that
positive.
Later. Two amazing days with the Army. Starting off at Sandhurst, which obviously was very close to Pennyhill Park, the England Hotel. And driving in there, I thought, I drove in there.
In what?
In the range, of course, with a bit of trepidation. Because anything that I've done with the Army, and you've got a military background with your dad and growing up in that kind of environment at times, and you see stuff on TV, the pre-seasons we've done with the Army, you're getting shouted at, you're getting rinsed, you're getting flogged, and you're sleeping in a tent or on the floor or on a rug or on a mat. And that ain't me anymore, is it? That's not me anymore.
I don't think that's anyone over the age of 40.
No, true. True.
But luckily it doesn't need to be.
No, because we had two of the very best days we've had in a long time with the Army in Sandhurst, down at Lark Hill, Middle Wallop with the Apaches.
I don't even know where we were. Like, you've got all these, you're name dropping these places. I know we were in Sandhurst and then we were in the bushes.
Yeah.
Then we were in the trenches.
Yeah.
I've got no idea where we were.
How funny were the trenches?
Oh, it was a brilliant 2 days. And maybe to give some context of why we were there. So the Great British Army on a recruitment drive. So I remember back in the day when I was a youngster, when I wanted to join the Army, but you'd get like Army careers advisors coming to your schools, coming to your youth clubs, coming to the colleges and speak and be on a big recruitment drive. Obviously, everyone's now looking down on their phone, so you don't even look up and people don't come out to your schools and youth clubs now because that's just the way that the world has changed. But Army recruitment, I have a feeling that numbers are slightly dropped, or the motivation to join the Army, or the idea of joining the Army is probably different to what the reality of it is. So with the podcast that we've got, the demographic that we've got, how impressionable our listeners are, it's a kind of recruitment drive to showcase how good the British Army is. So it's easy to sit here and say, oh, it was great, and we're basically cheap salesmen. But
hey,
I'm
telling you now, if it wasn't great, I'd tell you the truth.
I'd have a moan.
It was two of the most enjoyable days we've had in a long time.
Yeah.
And it opened my eyes to what the Army actually is.
And that's what we were saying. Like, we were having this discussion when we were there. We went to watch the Army under-23s versus the Royal Air Force under-23s. And we had a bit of a moment. We were like, as cold as it was, we were like, how good is this? Because what I don't think people realise about the army, or maybe they do, and this is what we'll talk about it. It's not all about being on the front line and you're in the battlefield, you're in the war zones, and there's this kind of chaos and danger, which that's part of it, and people like that. But this was like showcasing and us trying different things that are available to people that are thinking about joining the army. And then just one last thing, what we were talking about as well. In a world in which a lot of young men and women, there's massive opportunities for women in the army as well, but they're lost. They don't know what to do with their lives. And there was loads of different stories, and we can maybe go through some of the stories that we picked up along the way. But I just think in a world now, a society where the word purpose is thrown around, I need a purpose, I want to do a job that I love, I don't know what I'm doing, fulfillment, and with fulfillment is physical exercise, mental well-being. I was in that environment, right? And that's the thing that I miss about sport and rugby, is being in an environment with like-minded people.
You've got a squad, though. You've got four kids.
Yeah, it's different. It's not on the same. I'm not on the same wavelength.
Well, you're shouting at them.
Well, very true, but I'm like the captain, the general, but they don't shout at people in the army now.
No, they don't.
We learn all these new things, but I felt a sense of belonging when I was there. I loved it. Cannot speak highly enough, and we'll go through some of the stories in that. It was hilarious.
But you talk about a sense of purpose. It's also a sense of opportunity as well. The opportunities the army opens up, and being in the army, and you hear the stories about people travelling and, you know, going skiing here, there and everywhere and visiting the world. Not on you're visiting the world on a training exercise where you're not sleeping, you're not eating, and you're staring out at fields waiting for something to happen. The lifestyle, you go through hard training, don't get me wrong, but the lifestyle of it and the opportunities that it brings, playing sport, how much they promote that in the army, any sport, men, women's, you know, the ability and understanding that gives everyone a massive uplift in terms of happiness in life, being active, doing exercise, playing sports, team sports, individual sports. It was mind-blowing what's opened my mind around the army. And interestingly, and we're not going to speed through it all, but we got to the end of it and I'm thinking, I'd convinced myself by the end, I could do this. I maybe can't get through with the training, but like being in the army genuinely is an amazing opportunity. And I'm not just saying it because we've done stuff with them, but when you dig into it and understand the life experiences that a lot of these people have got because of the army and what they get to do, I'm thinking, that's awesome. I wonder, you know, if there's anything that I could do. So I asked, a massive shout out to Major Jen Stevenson. What a lovely woman. She took us around to all the places and chaperoned us and helped us out and taught us a load about the army. I said to her at the end, I was like, do you reckon I can be in the army? Do you reckon there's a job for me? She goes, Goody, the only job that you could do in the army right now is being a chaplain. That was it. So,
Rob, you know, when you looked at me and Goody when we were doing it, genuinely, hand on heart now, Northern Rock, honesty, out of the two of us, who would make it?
Christ.
Well, why are you even pausing?
No one.
I did the 7K run.
Yeah, mate, 7K walk you did.
Rob, sorry, go
on. Without the bag.
Yeah.
Without the bag.
Yeah. Without the bag.
I couldn't run. I've got pins and plates on my ankle. How many times do you need to know that?
Well, you need to be able to run. Rob, if you could pick one of us two that would make it in the army and the special forces will double down.
I do think Goody would be good as the chaplain, you know, with the bag of sweets.
Yeah. There we go.
Yeah.
So he's just saying Goody, is that it?
As a chaplain.
Yeah.
I felt at home, Andrew. But this is the thing. You must have been impressed with some parts.
I was impressed with some of your parts. Yeah,
I mean, the trigger.
Yeah, you absolutely shit yourself when you put. Sorry.
My word! It was funny because they didn't really tell us like some of the stuff. Like we had the safety briefing, and it was all very safe, and we were wearing the right gear and looked $1 million.
And on that, shout out to 34 Battery from the 14th Regiment Royal Artillery. They took us out.
You Fijians in there, right?
They'd make hell of a rugby team. Those
they
boys.
Would. They would.
Big Fijians as well.
Big Fijians. Well, there's a big sporting, there's a big rugby crossover in that. What about when I pulled the trigger?
But that was the first, for when we see the videos and people, you put it out there and the videos that we've seen that Rob and little Jimmy did and the content, it's going to be class and hilarious because I'm watching it back thinking maybe we've got a chance, like we've done all right here. And I look back at some of the videos, you're running like Lurch, your back's hanging off. I'm trying to roll around the floor like a slow-mo pig.
I've smashed my elbow as well. So I've gone full commitment. We're getting all these orders because there was like a nice mix.
Get your head down. I can't get my fucking head down. I can't even touch my knees. It's like trying to bend over in the trenches.
But there was a mix of, so you had the British Army there, but then they had like people from all over different countries.
Yeah.
Like there was one from like Malaysia or somewhere like that. So there's a nice mix of cultures. I've got a perforated eardrum. There's gunfire going off everywhere. They're screaming for me and you because they obviously saw me as a leader. Like
they saw you as the big freak. Shoot the freak.
They identify people early as leaders. That was one of the conversations they had on the march and shoot. Yeah. And they
identified you early on the march and shoot. You did the 7.2K run, I'll give you that. But you were jogging, it was very slow.
Mm.
They've all got...
You were in a car.
25... Yeah,
it was slow in a car.
They've all got 25 kilogram Bergens on and they're carrying other equipment. And you're there with your army jumper on at the back, not carrying anything, no bag, moaning about your back and your blisters, right?
Yeah, I didn't have any blisters. It was the back and my elbow was seized up and I've not been able to walk for 3 days. But that's not us not selling the army. I think anyone who's thinking about doing it should go down that route. The food as well. Andrew, how good was the food? How much food do I eat? Rob's laughing his head off.
I thought I ate quite a lot. Jim eats 3 to 4 times as much as I do.
It's the right kind of food, though, because in the army in the olden days, I thought you go up, you get one sausage.
Rations.
You get one hash brown.
Yeah.
You get a ration box as well. The food, which kind of makes sense if you're in a high-performance environment like the military is, like the army is. The food alone was enough for me.
Just to be happy.
And you to go.
Yeah. But we went out for a couple of pints Wednesday night as well. Well, you had a bath because you were cold, but me and Rob did. And we had a kebab as well. So, yeah, mate, good times. But we did compete, didn't we, James?
On what?
Do you want to... Ah, you've forgotten it, haven't you? You've forgotten it already. The only thing that we could compete on. Now, Major Jen Stevenson said, the only thing I've got in me is to be a chaplain. I disagree.
What?
Tell the snipers that.
Oh, you could be a sniper chaplain as well. No, but do you not think there's a dark irony in that?
Well, we were hosted by the 2 rifles and infantry training, and they took us up to the range, didn't they?
Your memory is unbelievable, Andrew. Well, you remember all these different corps and groups.
When
and
you've won, Jim, and we had a shoot-off, didn't we? Bit of practice. How cool was that, firing those rifles?
Yeah, it was called SA-80 rifles, yeah. Andrew, just to they be were specific.
Class, and then it went to automatic mode. It was brilliant. Like, I couldn't wipe the smile off my face, but it came down to a bit of a competition.
Well, that was the only thing we could compete, because effectively we were both lying down, so there was zero physical exertion. They were like, right, we need to get a level here.
How much did your back hurt when you were lying down, though?
Yeah, it did hurt.
And then anyway, so we had 22 shots over 3 different positions, so lying down on your knee, and standing up. Standing up was the hardest one, was it?
Yeah, I like that. It was like urban warfare.
Yeah. 22 shots. How many did you get, Jim?
21 out of 22.
Very
guilty.
Good. Very good.
Not bad.
Very good, that is. Me?
22.
22 from 22. Winner, winner, chicken dinner.
Yeah, it was.
So I could be a sniper.
Yeah, but you wouldn't be able to get into position.
No, they're going to patch me in. The lads from the 7 Regiment Army Air Corps can fly me in on their Apaches, lads.
I'll call the Apaches as well. There's loads to get through. Like, the content's going to come out. But I think there is a dark irony that the only thing that Andy Goode can do if he was to join the British Army would be a sniper chaplain.
There you go. Sniper chaplain, shoot and kill and then say sorry.
Would look great on LinkedIn. So we could shout out all of them. We could shout out a platoon, but my driver, my security, needed security, didn't I?
No, you didn't.
I did. Well, I'd add security, but Warrant Officer Bernie, big shout out to him.
Legend.
Northerner.
Yeah.
Hard as nails. He's driving, I'm sleeping. And then we're just telling the story. I was absorbing the stories.
Asleep.
Yeah, effectively.
Big shout out as well to Sergeant Devon McInnes. Brilliant bloke. He was driving me around and stitching me up. He just kept saying, why can't we go in the range? That's all he wanted to do, but great bloke. Had a lot of fun with him.
And shout out to Lance Corporal Isaac Reeson as well. Top bloke.
He was helping you, weren't he, with the filming?
He was.
Hell of a moustache.
Hell of a moustache.
Amazing moustache. But what about the drone as well?
Yeah.
He had proper kit.
Yeah,
he had
proper kit. He weren't like Cowboy Productions like the Rugby Pod, was he, Robbie? He was proper.
He's been on the England Rugby Channels this week as well.
Oh, has he?
Yeah, with his drone.
He's a top bloke.
Yeah. Oh, fair play. There you go. Some lovely rugby synergy.
Yep. My favourite, though, Major Jen Stevenson, thank you.
Yeah, she was great.
Everything
Major Jen, thank you. And thank you to the British Army for hosting us. The content will be out soon if we, Jimmy and Rob, press record. We're not too sure if they did. Let's hope they did.
I hope they did.
All right, enough about the Army. Be the best and all that. And talking about being the best, just want to get better. Owen Farrell.
Yeah.
Massive news, Andrew. Massive news that I did not see coming. He has stepped down from his position as England captain.
Yeah.
Did not see that coming. Did you? Honestly?
No. Well, we were in the car, weren't we, on the army camp, and news broke. And it's very sad that all the abuse that's gone on, and he feels he has to step away for the mental health of him and his family. You know, straight away you're thinking, why? You know, he's the ultimate competitor, isn't he? And I sit there and I think, I don't reckon he looks at the social media. I don't think he's like me and you, sitting on the bog, hiding from the kids, on Instagram or on Twitter, just looking at what's going on in the world. I don't think that's him. But ultimately, the messages have got back and the ill feeling. And if we're being honest, some of it has he's brought on himself about how he's carried himself and the things he's done in terms of the tackles and all this stuff. Not the abuse, but the critiquing. You have to be able to critique. And then Mark McCall's talked about it started in the mainstream media. And then I'm like, is that me and Jim? Are we mainstream media?
Hey, don't put me into this. We are not like, mainstream.
Has anyone been at any live shows where Jim's told his stories about Marbella?
But it does make you start second-guessing yourself.
Yeah.
It really does. Yeah. And I hope that when we do what we do, well, I hope that, I'm speaking for myself, Andrew, not both of us, but maybe both
of us.
Well, I think we have a responsibility. That's what I kind of feel like. And I think with the stuff around Owen Farrell, I don't know what newspapers it was in or what was being said. I can't remember. I did the behind a paywall most newspapers, but I know that the momentum and the narrative gathered around Owen Farrell with the red card before the World Cup and everything around that.
That wasn't a red card.
That wasn't a red card. His dad got brought into it, got asked at a press conference, and you could start seeing stuff being put in there that, no, this isn't okay, the way that he's being spoken
about. It was a red card, but it was banned.
Of course, and then wasn't banned, and then all the drama, which wasn't his fault. Like, no. As much as he put the high tackle in, which caused the yellow card, red card, we were doing the podcast at the time as it was happening.
Yeah.
From what I gather, and the stuff that I've seen, is around being booed when they played against Fiji.
Yeah.
And he comes up on the big screen. That's your England captain, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And you think about the media in this country, in the UK especially. I don't know what it's like in other countries. You think of the David Beckham stuff. I watched the doc with Beckham. You remember the stuff around Argentina with Simeone, flicks the heel up and gets sent off and all the stuff, the death threats and everything. You forget that they're human beings, right? Yeah. Wayne Rooney's had the same. You look at all the racial stuff that Marcus Rashford's going through that's out there in the public domain on social media that they're having to deal with. So I'll start with this and we can go further into it. This isn't a rugby issue. The stuff with Wayne Barnes, the stuff with Tom Foley, the stuff with Owen Farrell, it's a societal issue. That's what it is. That's what things are at the minute. And as bulletproof and as thick-skinned as Owen Farrell is, you're breaking through any human being if you keep going. Like, at some point, someone's going to break. And a brave decision to step down, the fact that he's put himself out there, putting his family first. Imagine the pressure you must be under as England captain, all the scrutiny that comes with that anyway, and the expectation, and his story and the way that he carries himself, which isn't a warm, he's not a warm character. No. And I'm not saying you have to be a warm character. He's got a Johnny Sexton about him. He's got a Dan Bigger. They probably have the same kind of things. But it's cut through now. Like, no one's bulletproof. And for him to step down was massive.
Yeah, it's a huge shame. When you say it's a societal issue, you're dead right. We've always kind of looked at rugby as a different fan base to football, where the abuse is harsh as you like. And you have to segregate fans from different clubs in that because of how tense it is. And we were chatting yesterday with the TNT boys and at Leicester, and it was like, this is now heavily involved in rugby. The rugby crowds have changed massively.
Yeah.
And, we want as many fans to get to games as possible, but it is a societal issue where everyone can pick up their phone, can abuse someone. I get loads of shit, and I'm not saying this is about me at all, but I just laugh it off. But at some point, something gets you. And obviously, something has got him foul. Maybe not on social media, but the whole fact around what you said, the booing when he's on screen by essentially some of his own fans. You think back to how you can compare what he's going through or how you can put yourself in that position. It's very difficult. I'm pretty flippant with you sometimes about being Scotland and we're good enough to play for England. It's a throwaway comment. And I look back to it when I played for England. No one wanted me to play for England because I was playing because Johnny was injured. And I knew that, but you have to try and cope with it somehow. And for Faz, I can't ever imagine getting booed by you. I mean, I can because I got booed by the England fans as well because I was shite. But him getting booed as England's skipper, everything he's achieved, England's top point scorer, 100-plus caps, one of England's greatest players to ever play the game, it must be very difficult. And then you add into that your own private life. So you've got two kids, school run and going shopping and just the simple things that any person can just go and get on with. Does he feel that people are looking at him going, England captain, this has happened, that's happened, he has to wear a baseball cap? And you don't want to have to live your life like that. So maybe a break will be great for him. There's obviously no rugby over the Six Nations for Saracens. And it's interesting, obviously, stepping back from England games, but not Saracens games. There is a bit of a knee injury there as well, from what you hear. And so I think it'd be great for him to have a break. Go and spend a month. And again, depends with the kids and schools and all that stuff. Go and spend a month on holiday. Get away from England. Get away from, this is during the Six Nations, get away from the pressures of it and enjoy spending time with your family. And Lawrence Dallaglio made a good point yesterday. We should be encouraging, and it's the whole balance. We're talking about Marrow and if he's leaving and Faz obviously staying as the marquee player. Should we encourage players to go and take a sabbatical, to go to Japan, play 12 games, come home?
That's what they do in New Zealand.
And that's the big thing. Would that help Owen Farrell?
I think he got an opportunity to go to Japan and didn't want it.
Yeah.
Because he's so intense. Imagine being that intense.
Oh, they're pretty intense over there as well.
Yeah, different though, isn't it? Because it's a whole different thing. Because how the stuff around...
How far can you run over there?
But the fame and fortune of someone like Owen Farrell, having played with him, know him a little bit, know his mates, he doesn't like any of that.
No.
When he says he wants to get better week on week, he means
genuinely.
He genuinely means it. And he's cut from that cloth where it's different to his dad. His dad has been in rugby league, I'm going to say more kind of worldly on the streets of kind of like growing up in that generation.
Drank
where
the beers.
It's a bit different, of course. And Owen's been born into that elitist system of winners.
Yeah.
You know, so that generational kind of shift between his dad and his uncles and then into that. And, you know, I was chatting to Ben Earl about it. It's like, is there an expectation now as England captain to be more than the captain on the pitch? And it's, you have to be this charismatic, opinionated character away from it. And when you have someone like Steve and you've got someone like Owen who are literally want to get better week on week and super it's driven. All about winning and they're so driven, people can't warm to that.
Mm.
And do you have a responsibility as England captain to be a certain way? I don't think you do. I think that someone like Owen probably hates the limelight.
Yeah.
And he'd go out there on Dogshit Park and want to win.
Yeah,
and that's what it comes down to. So maybe it's a reset for him. Maybe it's a reset for him and his family to reassess what the next 4 years look like. You know, does he come back?
Yeah.
I mean, like...
Well, who knows? I mean, it's one of those things.
I hope he does.
Yeah, we hope he does. But if he enjoys not having those pressures in his life and he doesn't need it financially or he doesn't have that desire anymore, then he doesn't come back. But it will affect him, I think, watching the Six Nations, knowing he's not playing. He's the sort of person that thinks he can do a better job.
Well, especially if England go well.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the hard thing. So listen, you know, he's got to get his mental health right for him and his family, get a break from the game. But also, you've seen the change in Owen Farrell over the last few weeks, I think, since the World Cup. He has been making more of an effort to go and speak to fans. I remember someone said to me, I can't remember who it was, but talking about the Saracens corporate hospitality and all this stuff, and they're like, oh, Owen Farrell was supposed to come up, but he didn't bother. But that was the kind of narrative around it. You don't know why he didn't come up. Like, he might have been injured, might have been having physio, whatever, whatever, after a game. But someone else said he didn't enjoy doing that. But you do have a responsibility to have to do that sort of thing for your club and your country. And so we're seeing more of Owen doing that. We saw it at the weekend. He signed autographs with kids and all that stuff. He was smiling and having pictures. And there's a better side to Owen Farrell than perhaps people see. And that's a responsibility on, you know, a lot of people to eke that out of him. And hopefully this change in people's perception and now hopefully changing people's behaviour around how they speak to people sees a better Owen Farrell come back, rested, ready to go, and, you know, with his mental health in good shape, and he's getting cheered instead of booed.
100%. So no Owen Farrell for Saracens, big void.
Yeah.
That's how good he is.
Yeah.
And I know they've been through a lot. Mark McCall's interview in the lead up. I say big void for Saracens. Northampton are phenomenal this season. How good?
There you go.
I don't think it was negative around Saracens and Faz. We had to state the news that was happening, but positives around Northampton.
Yeah. You know, you're always looking at it going, were Saracens bad or were Northampton really good? Now, Northampton are always a really good side to watch, I think. Ball in hand. Normally they leak a load of tries but score a load more than the opposition, or it's an exciting game where there's loads of tries scored, high scoring. They nutted out, and every aspect of their game I thought was unbelievable at the weekend. Very anti-Northampton if you're a neutral fan that just perceives them as a team that loves to chuck the ball around but haven't got the hard graft in them. Led, and when you say leaders, led by example, Courtney Laws was
unreal.
Unbelievable.
I thought he might have thrown the towel in, and that's with all due respect.
Yeah.
You finish from England, you're like, you know what, bit of a swan song. Cash in.
Yeah.
I'll go to France, Pro D2, if they want to pay me a bit of money.
Yeah.
Complete opposite of Courtney Laws.
Putting his body about. Like,
phenomenal.
Out of contract though, wouldn't he? So he's in he's in contract.
Well, there's that as well. He drives a Bentley, so I don't think he's short of a bobble.
No,
too.
I know. But he was brilliant. Furbank was outstanding. Finn Smith, Dingwall, their attack was on point. Yeah, Mitchell was on the bench. came on, absolutely turned Goody inside out for his try. They took their opportunities, but more importantly for them, they barred up like you wouldn't believe physically and defensively. And that's something that you cannot often say about Northampton. You can talk all you want about the glitz, the glam, the offloading, the pace, the play out, the, you know, the options in attack, and Sam Vestey's ran that for a while and he's been brilliant. They've been missing. They've had the worst defence in the Prem. I think last year they leaked the most tries comfortably. And this year...
they've evolved, yeah, Andrew.
Lee Radford's come in. Look like they're enjoying defence and banging boys. And there's no bigger test than going down to the Stonex and banging boys physically there. You know, you've got Billy coming out, you've got Marrow, you've got some big units there. I know, listen, they were missing a few. They had Jamie George on the bench, but Theo Dan was carrying McFarland. They had a big old team. And Saracens normally get on a roll, get on the front foot, physically bully teams, and it's just comfortable for them, isn't it?
Mm.
It wasn't comfortable for Sarries on Saturday.
No.
It was cold, mind. Yes, Saracens missing Farrell, and Manu Vunipola has played 10, and you know, he's a good player, but he ain't Owen Farrell, is he? And you take it, I was quite surprised, actually, and I feel a bit bad saying this, but when you know you haven't got Owen Farrell as your 10, why have you got Jamie George and Mako Vunipola on the bench against Saints, who you know it's always a bit tasty against them?
I'll tell you why.
What's that?
Because they've got to go to South Africa this week, yeah, in the Champions Cup. You can't bar up every week.
No, you're right. You're right. But it might have cost them a little bit.
Mm.
But maybe they said, you know what, actually, we're doing well in the Prem. And they're targeting the Bulls game this week, which you're playing at altitude in Pretoria. Your lungs are going to be falling out your arse.
Well, we'll find out. I'll be there.
Yeah, you will.
It's not about me, though.
No,
it's not. I'm there.
Flying to South Africa, aren't you?
Flying to South Africa.
In the Saracens camp.
The podcast. Well, both camps.
Go on.
Well, I'll hopefully be in the Blue Bulls camp as well. Trying to get an interview with Kane and Moody and Willie LaRue.
Right. Is this World Rugby or is this Saracens TV?
No, this is World Rugby, which hopefully Saracens TV
content
will
share. Director.
Yes, content and creative director. I will rubber stamp thee.
Flying to Pretoria, had a hell of a night out in Pretoria.
Really?
Yeah. Sharks played the Bulls there and we went out. I was out with Francois Hugard. That's my first dalliance with him. What a boy. What a legend. Good spot, mate. Pretoria. It's not Cape Town, but it's rugby heartlands.
Talking of the Sharks, yeah, Pretoria.
Absolutely battered.
Pants pulled down.
Yeah.
And they were fully loaded as well.
Yeah.
Sharks are struggling. Sorry, Marco Masotti, friend of the show, owner of the Sharks.
Yeah. John Plumtree, my old coach. Brilliant bloke. Good coach. Under a bit of pressure now. Just gone back in.
Yeah.
But that's always a big rivalry, that is, the Bulls against the Sharks. I remember I played in it. The Sharks lads are like, you better be up for today. I'm like, yeah, yeah. They're like, no, this is a proper rivalry. Mm. So they got owned a little bit, the Sharks. Which...
they did. Maybe they got hammered. They got 44 points to 10 put on them. And they were, I say, fully loaded. I don't think they've won a game away from home since Feb.
Something like that.
Look at me. In the hot seat, just throwing out some stats.
Stats, man.
But interesting, because the Sharks and the Hollywood Bet Sharks, more specifically, they're expected to do something, right? So they've had a few changes. But the Bulls, physical, some quality players.
So what you're saying, good luck, Sarries, this weekend?
It's going to be tough for Saracens down there.
Did you see Quinns doing that to Sale on Friday night?
I did see them doing that. I didn't expect to see them doing that.
There we go.
Sale were off, weren't they? I mean, Quinns are one of these teams, right? They're great to watch.
Here we go.
They're just so up and down.
Well, they were definitely up on Friday night.
Well, they're as physical as I've seen them in a long, long time.
Maybe it's because it was against Alex Sanderson's Sale.
And they knew that...
and he did that interview that one time.
What did they say?
Well, yeah, I think it was Saracens. He said they always bar up for Saracens, don't they?
Maybe they meant bar up for him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I thought Quinns were brilliant. Like, the way that they play, I think them and Northampton are the two best teams to watch.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see if you can be hot and cold, if it brings you to the end of the season. Joe Marla played well. Played well.
I've got a question for you, though. Let's get away from him. Joe Launchbury.
Yeah.
Back, playing well.
Yeah.
Yeah, obviously had the issues with Wasps and then went off to play in Japan. Yeah. And he's now back at Quinns. It doesn't look right seeing Launches in a Quinns shirt, even though he was in the academy there.
Ask me the question.
England?
No.
Oh.
Okay. No.
I think he'd do a job.
Well, is that the level that you've got to now, just coming in and doing
Mate,
a job?
Third best in the world, pal, we are.
But that, see, you've just said it. Would Joe Launchbury come in and do a job? Of course he would.
Well,
he's
I'm thinking,
a quality
like,
player.
Say, Marrow has a Six Nations off or goes abroad or whatever. Like, our second row options at the minute are Marrow, Ollie Chesham and...
George Martin.
George Martin, who's injured currently. What? I'll tell you one thing, Johnny Hill, I'm going to say it. He was embarrassing at the weekend. He's like the old fake tough guy, isn't he? had his forearm across the throat of Cunningham South on the floor like Comard.
On concrete.
Yeah.
That's what I did look
after
at.
After he's flipped him over the old barrier, I'm like...
He should have been yellow card. Hey, yeah, what
that's about yellow,
how funny was the ref? Is no.
No, it's not.
Why was there a French referee?
Well, because they're doing an exchange, because it's the investing.
They're doing an exchange.
An exchange. It was like when we were at school and you had a Frenchman come and stay with your family and then you went over there. No?
French exchange.
A French exchange, yeah. Rob. Did you ever have one of them?
Did we fall?
Of course you didn't, mate. No, Northerner. There's no French exchange going on in...
Do you even go to school, Rob?
Court.
Sometimes.
Sometimes. There we go.
See, one word answers.
There you go.
Was that two? That was two, actually. I didn't go to school.
But no, there was a referee exchange, James, because it is the Investec Champions Cup this weekend. They do it every year, or they've started to over the last couple of years. Tony Spreadbury, shout out to Spreaders.
Spreaders. Massive nutsack on him. Yeah, massive.
The biggest nutsack. All right, Goody. That's all he ever says. But going back to Johnny Hill, fake tough guy. Armad, he's a big lad. He's concentrating on playing rugby.
He's a British and Irish Lion.
Yeah, but
it's Quinton. Why
he was
up,
tough.
Though?
He was pretend to be tough. He was fake hard. And then he got fucking sat down by Will Joseph.
How good is Will Joseph? Is that Jonathan Joseph's brother?
Yeah.
So he was at London Irish Welling.
Yeah.
Man, London Irish can produce some kind of he was worth 13.
I remember start of last year, I said, we were talking about a few bolters. I put him in the bolter list.
Did you?
I thought he might be a bolter for the World Cup because I've always rated him. You know, I saw him at London Irish and coming through. But he was class for Quins. And Marcus Smith won the old heads up against George Ford, didn't he?
He did. He did.
Owen Farrell says he's not playing in the Six Nations on the Wednesday. On the Friday night, the two protagonists, Marcus Smith coming up against George Ford. Marcus Smith pulled George Ford's pants down.
No matter, he's a 15, mate. Big shout as well to Caden Murley. We saw his dad, didn't we?
Did
that's why we're giving him a shout out more because of his dad.
No, I love. I'm a fanboy of Caden Murley. We've
said that. As well, but more so like. Because we met his dad.
At
the under-23s, Army versus the RAF.
Yeah.
And he came up to us.
Dad's quite good looking as well, isn't he, for an older boy?
Yeah. Military man.
Yeah.
Military man. So smart. Well, Andrew.
Yes?
You were at the Leicester-Newcastle match. Sorry, Rob, we've got to go there.
Yeah.
And this is harsh. And we can get into being harsh and how we unpick what Newcastle do going forward.
I think it's tough because obviously what the owners are trying to do is they've seen what's happened at Worcester and at Wasps. And they're trying to... you know, secure our club looking forward. But ultimately, money talks, isn't it? You know, if you can't invest, you can't have the squad size. You know, last year he said to lads, we're going to, you know, halve your wages by 50%. So we've seen good squad players, good Prem standard players leave. And, you know, he's back to youth, but it's just tough, isn't it? It's tough. And
I'll translate that.
A fucking shade, but fucking we're going to be, we don't pay anyone enough money and we're going to be our young kids. How are you? Really tough one because I'm watching that game and growing the game. Not about growing the game. I could barely watch it. It was like a team run.
Yeah.
Leicester were in second, third gear. Jasper Visa was great. Got man of the match. Brilliant. Tommy Rafael. Like for me, either he is.
He should have got man of the match.
Yeah, he's wicked. My old chop tackle. So the quality, and again, Alex Codden, we can talk about his interview after.
We will.
There's loads to unpick with that. And again, someone tell me if I'm wrong. You can sue me for defamation of character or however you say it. I'm hearing some of these Newcastle players are on 0-hour contracts. Like that's what's happening. Other teams are looking as well to sign the players. Newcastle aren't even offering. And I understand, and look, people hate, I don't know why, this is the facts, but people hate me talking about it. Sport and entertainment is driven by money.
Yeah.
You can't come out and see what's happened with Worcester, London Irish and Wasps and talk about investment, talk about funding, and then call out the RFU or call out someone to put their hands in the pocket to put money into a team.
Yeah.
As much as I love Newcastle and I want them to be in the Prem and we need Northern rugby.
We need Newcastle. Think of the players that Newcastle produced as well.
We need London Irish. We need Worcester.
We do.
I understand the romance around that.
Do you know what? The worry for me and a lot of people, and more so people involved in Newcastle, I have heard Dave Thompson, the owner, and his son Matt, who used to play running the show, they're making decisions without consulting coaches. The worst that I've heard, I don't know how to say it.
Well, no, because they might interact with us and say that we're wrong.
He's back in, so Seymour Cuddrey owns it as well. Dave Thompson's come back in, obviously got a percentage of the club. I don't know to what extent. Dave Thompson, from what I hear, ain't bothered about the rugby finishing last, whatever. The rumour is that he's just bothered about the land and wants to run the ground into
Andrew,
run the club into the ground.
And literally.
And then sell the ground for land.
Look at Rob's face.
Which
Rob's thinking I'm going to buy a house on there. If that's the case, I love the club that much.
But we're joking. I'm not joking about that.
No, we don't want to joke.
And that is, to me, it's the same situation, if that is the case, as the Clowns that and Cowboys at Worcester that came in, those owners. I spoke to Steve Darman on Saturday, he's still keen in getting them back. But, I mean, it takes a massive amount of money to make your team competitive. And we're probably talking difference between 5 or 6 million quid from the, what Leicester spend. I'm not just talking on their squad, I'm talking logistics of the whole operation. So all your S&C, all your physios, doctors, masseurs, yeah, the running of the show, team managers, all the stuff, the travel. And they're doing it. And you saw it in Alex Codling's voice and his tone and his emotion. He's devastated. I also hear that they don't know whether they're getting paid month to month. So how do you fully commit as a player? Well, you expect to pull a jersey on and fully commit. You've got to be in. But the fires that are being put out there and the way that some of the players left, so Davidson, McGuigan, some of their top stars left in contract because there was an offer to buy him out. Dave Thompson wanted to pocket the cash himself and they haven't spent anything on it. And you get what you pay for. They've got some quality, good young players. Kalamchik's great. Radwan's great. You know, there's a few others in there that, you know, Blamire's good and you've got exciting players. But the sum of the parts is what you spend on. And they've probably got a championship style squad playing against premiership teams and they just couldn't cope with the physicality. And, you know, Leicester were fully barred up, fully loaded. Newcastle had changed a few. They've got some young kids that they're trying to push through and give experience to. But I just worry about Dave Thompson as the owner, genuinely, hand on heart. I've not heard very good things at all, and that doesn't bode well for Newcastle. I want to see that club. I love going to Newcastle. Love my time there. But I think most away players, apart from when it's absolutely fucking Baltic, enjoy going up to Newcastle and hopefully pack a shirt for a night out as well, because it's a brilliant place. And we need that club. And the RFU need to... And someone came at me on social media because we said something on TNT Sports yesterday about the RFU and the PRL need to help out and, you know, maybe fund stuff. And there was a Worcester fan going, oh, well, it's not fair on us. They didn't do it for us. And I understand you can't have one rule for the other. But for us to lose the most northern team who have produced some of the players they've produced and the history that they've got, because we go down to 9 and then 8, we're fucked. The Prem's fucked. So
I just don't know how you talk about investment on one side of it when there's a demise or when someone's really struggling. But when you're thriving, there's an issue around invest. I know we're going down a rabbit hole and me and you see differently on this. But
no, I understand.
Yeah, but it is one rule for one. I mean, it's awful.
And the scary thing is the salary cap's going up next year to 6.4. And Newcastle are spending nowhere near it now. Haven't won a game yet. And then next year, when other teams spend up to 6.4, they ain't spending that next year, are they? If they're not spending 5 now. So that gap's only going to get bigger. And that's the worry for Newcastle. And you feel that for Alex Codling. I looked at his flippers that he had on. Wellington flipper boots.
They were like Crocs with no holes. Weren't they?
And that was before the game and I smiled, and then after the game I just felt sorry for him because the emotion was raw.
Well, that's what it is. It's tough though. Talking of tough, Tommy Rafael, how good?
Yeah.
He is quite, losing his hair, that's fine. Yeah. That's just a side note.
Ginger, losing his hair.
Yeah,
ginger.
But, well, maybe it's a good thing then. Andrew, I can say that to you because you're
I've
a ginger
got a
man.
Bit of ginger.
Would you say a bit of ginger or you are ginger?
No, I'm not ginger.
You are ginger.
I'm not ginger at all, you Michael.
You are. But Tommy Rafael, unbelievable. Yeah. Actually, him and Jasper Visa, who I've heard is leaving Leicester.
I've heard who's staying.
Have you heard he's staying?
No comment.
All right, well, you will know better than me.
I hope he's staying. He's topped the ball carry list for the last 4 weeks in the Prem. Tom Rafael's been brilliant. Chop tackles. Both Rafael and Visa work together at the breakdown. Turnovers, one chops, one bangs. You know, one's over the ball. They're both, their technique is unbelievable. You know, Tom Rafael's not a big lad. He's dismantling mauls on his own.
Mm.
I know he's only playing against Newcastle.
I was going to say, I felt bad, but
he's the first Leicester open side flanker to score a hat-trick since
Neil Back. Okay.
Peel Back.
Long time, yeah. I'm not calling Neil Back Peel Back. There's no chance. Bloke's a fucking legend.
And people talk about the impact of, you know, you were questioning Leicester at the start of the season, weren't you? They'd lost a couple early on. They had a big win down at Bath. But then when you look at it, when you put in Montoya, Chesham, Dan Cole, you're talking about the spine of a team, Jasper Visa, Tommy Rafael, Ben Youngs, Andre Pollard, Freddie Stewart. You stick 8 World Cup players that
there you go.
Most of them have got to at least the quarterfinals, if not semis and last game. I'm telling you, that Leicester team is, the DNA's there, the old school DNA, but they've added some layers on. You didn't see anything yesterday because the weather was absolutely pushing it down, pal.
Line-out was good, though. Big shout-out to you, Diggs. Yeah. Well done, mate.
I didn't see Donkey, actually.
I saw him in the change room at half-time.
Yeah, he was playing hangman, I think.
He was. Don't show them the whiteboard. Yeah. We've got the bonus point, but don't show them the whiteboard.
We're drawing the willies on the board. But yeah, no, it's good Leicester performance. And then... You know, into the Investec Champions Cup now. We'll chat a bit about the URC in a moment, but before we do, we can have a chat with Munster's World Cup winning Springbok lock, who has just signed a new contract with the province. Who we got, Jim?
There's only one man. It's the great JK, John Klein. Do we call you John? Do we call you JK?
No, you can stick to JK. I sort of dropped John when I moved to Ireland and got tired of explaining that my name is in fact not John. it's been sort of a running joke at the club for a good few years, so just JK.
Jim knows a JK. JK Rowling, Jim's friends with. Who's a better JK? JK Rowling or JK?
No, JK. He's a rugby man, fellow rugby man. There I was hugging go. All the South Africans at the World Cup, so obviously I'm going to be all over JK.
Sia, give me a Sia, hug. Get out.
Someone turn the camera on. Was I getting a bit of stick, JK, in the camp or not? Was nothing said?
No. You came off quite sincerely. I have to give it to you. It was all positive reviews from us.
Man, I absolutely loved it. Well, let's start on that because, like, for me, being pitch side where you lads were was just absolutely phenomenal. I know it feels like years ago since the World Cup final and everything that happened there. But just as an experience, mate, just let's start with that. Like, how cool was it in France for you and your team?
Unreal, man. It took me about a month to realize I was actually at the World Cup because I was still trying to figure out how I made the Springbok team, and then, you know, everything ensued after that. So I got a bit of a lag in my head, I'd say. I only just realized we won the World Cup last week. You know, just trying to keep up with, I suppose, all the changes the last few months. It's been a very upside down kind of year for me, but in the best way possible. Like, I mean, I never imagined I'd end up playing for the Springboks, never mind playing at a World Cup for the Springboks. Forget about winning a World Cup with the Springboks. You know, that was completely different level for me.
Yeah, amazing. I want to come back to the story about how in a bit, but mainly I want to hear about the celebrations because it must have been a crazy few days. A, winning the World Cup, not many people can envisage it or have lived it, but then seeing the scenes going back to South Africa. Firstly, talk us through the night. You win the World Cup, you lift the World Cup, there's beers in the changing rooms, everyone's loving life, happy. There's budgie smugglers everywhere. Faf's budgie's tiny, but he's still got the smugglers on. But the celebrations there must have been huge. And then talk us through the night out. I want the pure details. The Saturday night, Sunday, then back to South Africa and how good all those scenes were because it looked incredible.
There wasn't much of a night out, to be honest. It was very much a night in. Obviously, straight onto the beers when you go in the change room. All fun and games, a couple of speeches made, a lot of happiness, a few tears. It was class, just the experience from start to finish. And then after that, straight home, into the hotel, we all locked ourselves in a big room with a load of ski masks and got on the booze. Essentially, it was a serious celebration now. Me and the wife were over and we had to actually leave at 5:30 to go collect my son from my in-law's place. So that was a lot of fun. Grabbed the child, came back, and then basically went straight on the beer again. And then my mother arrived to look after him. So it was a bit of a passing it from one grandmother to another. But it was insane, man. And then Sunday was a full day. I think everyone hit the hay at around 12 o'clock on Sunday night because we had a flight the next morning at like 7:30 or something. So it was on the bus for 6 o'clock. And then it was a very, very good flight. I've never seen so many people in business class actually trying to get into economy.
Oh, really? Reverse? Yeah.
I'd say there was a lot of people just trying to escape the general area where we were. It was one of those Airbus A380s, you know, where the top floor is all business class. And yeah, no, it was good, man. It was good.
Yeah, there was rumors that Rassi was flying the plane. Is this true or not?
You know what? It could have happened. I wouldn't put it back.
I'm your pilot.
He's done a few things. He's done a few things in his life.
Yeah, absolutely amazing. I mean, it's crazy when you unpick it, JK, and let's get straight into your story. This eligibility stuff came in, I would say, more so to benefit the likes of Samoa, Tonga, just to name two, for example. And we've seen that other teams like, obviously, South Africa in your story is probably the headline one because of what you've been through. Just talk us about how crazy that was in terms of your journey to leave South Africa, the country that you love, that you're from, that you are, to Ireland to play for Munster. You get capped by Ireland, which is your adopted country, which we've seen. It works for a lot of players. I'm sure it was absolutely amazing at the time. But then that emotion then to get picked by South Africa while you're still playing at Munster and play for the nation that is your blood to your core.
It's a long story. So, like, I mean, obviously it starts with me leaving the Stormers at 22 when Rassi gave me a phone call and he was like, listen, I'm going to Munster. I need a lock. Do you want to come with? And that was sort of me just thinking, well, I'm 22, I've got nothing tying me down, might as well take a chance on it. Well, 3 years later, playing for Ireland at the next World Cup, which was obviously a dream back then. I mean, I think I was eligible on the 8th of August and I made my first appearance on the 10th of August or something. So like, I only squeezed in eligibility there by like 2 days, got a good bit of game time, played a good few matches, and it was a great experience playing for Ireland and, you know, massive honour. And coach has changed and I obviously wasn't what Andy was looking for, which is fair enough. You know, every coach has his pick of what he wants and one guy is different from another. You can see obviously Ireland's system's working fairly well for them at the moment and Andy's doing really well. So I've no hard feelings about that, but I'd sort of made peace with the fact that my international career was done. And then, yeah, the Sunday morning after the URC final, got a call with Rassie and he was basically said, listen, if you want to come join us for the rugby championships, we'd really love to have you. And obviously I was still pissed. So didn't really remember too much of the conversation.
Because you won it in South Africa as well, didn't you?
Yeah, we won it in South Africa. Yeah, it was down in Cape Town.
Of course. Yeah.
Yeah, it was crazy. Like, I'd say there was 2,000 Munster supporters and the rest were all Stormers supporters. So we were up against it. But it was a great result for us, obviously, off the back of what could have been a nightmare season the way it started. I think we lost 5 out of 7 or something at the start of the season.
Mm.
And it wasn't looking very good. But turned that around and ended up winning the Cup, which was obviously a massive, massive achievement for us as a team and as a club. It was our first trophy in like 12 years or something. So
yeah,
it's good to break the drought and hopefully that leads to more going forward. But basically got the phone call of Rassie at 9 a.m. Unexpected, to say the least. Spent the next few days sort of debating the pros and cons of it with my family. And obviously off the bat, you immediately want to say yes, but then you realize there's repercussions and, you know, there's a lot of things that could have gone wrong since then. But I've been really fortunate in the fact that everything sort of worked out for me this year. Just signed a new contract with Munster as well, which was probably one of the main worries, is that Munster wouldn't be able to keep me if I ended up leaving. And I mean, just after finishing building a new house and have a 10-month-old child, so I don't think my wife would have been too pleased if we had to ship out. But we said it was a risk we'd be willing to take. And yeah, look, I'm incredibly blessed in the fact that it worked out. Obviously, my first cap at Loftus against Australia, being thrown straight into the mixer, was also something I didn't really envision happening. I thought maybe, you know, come off the bench for one or two games and see how I go. But Rassie put a little bit of faith behind me and threw me in to start that game. And we won it. And it was just a small boy's dream. You know, when you're growing up, you're watching your country play rugby, you're like, geez, one day I'd love to be that. And there I was.
As they say, the rest is history. I mean, one thing just on that, there was a couple of things. I was going to ask you about how the lads received you. I mean, is there a kind of banter environment in the South Africa team? But then more so about singing the anthem, and singing the Irish national anthem would have one emotion. But when you're stood there singing the South African national anthem, which is probably something you dreamt of as a young lad, I'm sure the taste was so much more sweeter because of everything that you'd been through previously, and then how much stick you got off the lads, if there was any.
there was a bit of stick at the start. Well, actually, no, the stick sort of lasted the entire way through the World Cup, but it sort of got quite funny towards the end because everyone started tweeting, you know, the first Irish international to do this, the first Irish international to do that. the lads were having a bit of fun with it. All right, but yeah, look, I suppose it's unique at the moment, but it probably won't be in a few years, in regards that I played for two Tier 1 nations at two World Cups, one after the other. I mean, obviously, very, very honoured to do both. You know, to win the World Cup with my home country is, obviously, I think, you know, it's where you grow up, how you've identified for your entire life. So it means a whole awful lot. Not saying that the Irish caps and the Irish anthem didn't mean much. I mean, it's my adopted country. I've lived here 7 going on 8 years now, and it'll be 10 by the end of my next contract. My wife's Irish. My son was born here. Even my dogs are Irish. So
an Irish wolfhound.
Yeah. Oh, geez. I wish. I've got 2 beagles and they drive me fucking insane. Useless dogs.
Was there any chat around the Ireland South Africa game when obviously the Irish beat you boys and some of the Munster lads were like, oh, you picked the wrong one there, didn't you, son?
Yeah, there was a bit of that, but
who? Pete.
I won't name and shame. I won't name and shame. I did get.
Oh, you fucking picked the wrong one there, fella.
I did get send him a nice picture of me holding the gold medal at the end of it. So I think I got one over on him.
Nice. Right.
The one thing that shocked me about the entire thing was how positive the reaction was from everyone. All the boys in Munster were just delighted for me that I got the opportunity to play at international level again. A few of the lads had said to me sort of, you know, would I declare? And I always said I'd never declare because sort of not my place to go looking for it because I had dedicated myself to Ireland. So it wasn't my place to go looking for Rassie to pick me or, you know, calling up Jacques saying, listen, I'm available if you want me. But, you know, when the opportunity came by, I think the resounding emotion around it was just happiness for me and, you know, for my family. And the same goes from the South African lads. I think when I arrived, I had, you know, a little bit of trepidation because I was sort of this fella that previously played for Ireland and an outsider stepping in. And it's not how I was received at all. It was open doors, open arms. All the lads were just delighted to have me there. It was an incredible experience. It was really great to walk into a team environment. And I will say that it's the healthiest team environment I've ever worked in. Like nothing happens behind closed doors. It's all out in the open. Team selection down to who gets picked and why they're not picked. It's all said in front of the entire group. And it just makes for an incredibly healthy situation where there's not conversations happening behind closed doors, where lads are being promised one thing, but they get another. It was just such a positive experience. I can't really say it enough.
One of the things I want to ask you about the World Cup, what made a lot of news was the bomb squad. The bomb squad got bigger.
It did.
It went from 6-2 up to 7-1. You all having a bit of banter. Who's going to cover 9? Who's going to cover... I'll play 13. Were you any of you putting your hands up to get in the backs?
I'd say I could put my hand up, but I'd be laughed out of the place. But a few of the lads were covering like 4 positions at a time. I think it says a lot about how talented some of the players are. You look, a guy like Peter Steff was covering both flanks. He was covering 8. He was covering lock. He was covering wing. Same goes for Quaha. Quaha was also covering 4 or 5 positions. But, you know, the 7-1 split or the nuke squad or whatever you want to call it, that game against New Zealand, that was quite an epic one because we literally all went on at the same time. And it was this... one-for-one switch. It was intense.
You know, like in the week when Razzie's announcing that, is Razzie like, lads, I've got something that is going to blow up. Like, this is going to go mental. Everyone, we're going to laugh about it, but it's going to be so effective. I want to know how Razzie tells the story.
Does he tell you like that? Does he say, like, bomb squad, and then he announces there's only one back on the bench? Does he have that crack with you?
Yeah, he does a squat drop, and then he says it, and then, you know. he's, in fairness, he does say, look, this is probably going to cause some controversy. And listen, if this goes poorly, they're going to say Rassie and Jacques are the two dumbest coaches in world rugby.
Yeah.
But if it goes well, it's going to be great. I think the first announcement of it was a little bit unexpected because the squad's announced on the Monday with a box, which is, you know, it's different to some teams I've played with. So it's sort of, you've no idea who's going to be picked. And then all of a sudden the team sheets up.
Yeah,
it was a bit of a shock for me, especially being picked in the finals team. I thought my playing journey at the World Cup had sort of ran its course. I was shocked, let me put it that way, but obviously delighted. Gutted for the lads who didn't make the team off the back of it, but yeah, just what an honour.
I've enjoyed speaking to you, cracking bloke. I can hear an Irish twang in there. I can 100% hear a Munster Irish twang in there.
Man, if you live here long enough, eventually it'll get in.
Did you get any abuse from the South African lads?
Oh, all the time. At the start, it was bad. My accent actually soft. Well, it's not so much the accent, it's more the colloquialisms.
Yeah.
You say like all the time, and do you know what I mean? Like, I just said like. It's sort of drilled into you after a while. So the first while, it was, yeah, the lads took the piss out of me a fair bit. There was a couple of lads who actually didn't know I was Afrikaans until like 3 weeks into it. I remember Michael van Staden, he sat next to me in every meeting. And after about 3 weeks, he goes, are you Afrikaans? And I was like, yes, you tool. I'm Afrikaans.
Yeah, I've been listening and understanding every word you've been saying, pal.
Yeah.
I just want to ask on South Africa as a country and moving into the Six Nations, there's rumours and there's talks of this. From your perspective, being in Ireland, but also South Africa, the history and the championship, can you see it as a natural thing that could happen in the future? Do you think it's a positive if South Africa... Because it almost seems like the stars are aligning, right? The URC,
yeah.
So many South Africans littered across the world, the time zone, it kind of fits, right?
I think practically it works better than than probably the Rugby Championship. Now, would it be sad if the Rugby Championship went out the door? I think so. I mean, you have the history of the Tri Nations and then into the Rugby Championships when Argentina joined. I think it would be sad for Southern Hemisphere rugby, but then at the same time, it'd probably be good for world rugby. You know, time zones do tend to affect. The big topic is probably viewership at the moment. Like, we need to up viewership if we want the sport to thrive and survive. So, you know, we've got the Australian World Cup next and then the USA World Cup after that. So I think just the fact that the USA were given a World Cup is world rugby is trying to increase viewership. And that's a massive market. You're talking 300 plus million people that once they buy into a sport, they're fanatic. So,
yeah,
you know, it'd be good to get into that market properly. I do think it's probably a logical move. Whether it'll happen, I mean, obviously that's not for me to know or decide. There's people that probably get paid a lot more than me that are in charge of that. But I think it'd be cool.
Be easier for you though, wouldn't it, living in Munster?
Yeah, it'd be quite easy for me. It'd be very convenient for me. I wouldn't mind it.
So JK says it's happening. It's happening, boys and girls.
Yeah,
it's might happening. Text Rassi and be like, listen, could we base it in Limerick if we do come up here?
Awesome. Just a line on Graham O'Rountree. He's a former teammate and coach of mine and Goody's, but it's so good to see him. I say happy. He must be happy. He doesn't always look happy, but he looks happy. How's he been for your development?
Great. He's fantastic. I think as a coach and both as a bloke, I think he's a great guy.
100%.
I think he's a fantastic rugby coach. The biggest thing that works for him is the fact that he's an ex-player. And I mean, not just an ex-player. 450-something professional caps. That's immense.
Yeah, he's a legend, yeah.
Proper rugby legend. And I think, in fairness, he's probably going to become a coaching legend as well. I think he's got a good team around him at the moment, which has been approved this year as well. Added a few more bits to the puzzle. So, no, I think it's onwards and upwards for him, hopefully for the club as well, obviously. Over the next 2 years, Munster will look to win a few more trophies and Wig will be at the helm. Yeah, I can't speak highly enough of him. I think he's a great fella.
He loves being called Wiggy as well. So if you
Wiggy,
want to call him Wiggy.
Yeah, no, I've heard he loves that. Yeah,
Being called Wiggy.
I'll throw so Goody says. In my next meeting with him, I'll go, "Oi, Wiggy, how you doing? Nice to see you."
Say Goody says.
Well, you won't need to because Wiggy listens. I mean, Graham O'Rountree listens to this. You know the Spotify thing that comes out with the most like listened to podcast or song? This came up as Graham O'Rountree's number one. He's a super fan.
Yeah. Oh, he so knows. I'd say he's on to you every day, potholing.
Yeah, he is. He's a legend, yeah.
JK, been an absolute pleasure. Thanks for coming on the show. Wish you all the best for the start of the Investec Champions Cup as well with Munster and the rest of the season. Then hopefully we'll see South Africa in the Six Nations, eh?
Oh, I don't know. I'm a romantic.
Well, JK says it's happening.
I'll go with
you. I said it was happening.
There we go.
Thanks so much for the chat.
Top man. Thanks, JK.
Cheers, boys.
Top lad.
He is, isn't he? You can definitely hear the Irish twang coming out.
I couldn't hear it.
Yeah. He sounded a bit like my boy Finlay Beelam. I could hear that, him coming out. And that's
West Coast, though, isn't it?
Connacht's not far from Munster, is it?
Oh, is it not?
Yeah, neighbours. They're all neighbours around there.
It's more inland, isn't it, Munster? Doing really well as a team. Yeah. I mean, what a great story. Listen to him speak as well. What a great man. Not that you ever doubt that. No. Most lads are great lads, but unbelievable story. Two World Cups in two cycles.
What I loved about it is the fact that he said he didn't go phone in Jack Nienaber or Razzie. They came to him because that's how much he respected Ireland. And then you're not going to turn an opportunity like that down, are you? But yeah, brilliant bloke.
Exactly. There's no apologies. It's professional sport, isn't it? And yeah, what a crazy story. He'll be on the, what was it, Question of Sport or whatever.
Yeah,
his Trivial Pursuits.
Yeah.
Like,
no one watches Question of Sport anymore.
No, they don't.
Year,
no, they don't. No, but like, you're not hearing that story again.
No.
Not in our time.
Tier one
to winners.
Yeah.
I just don't think it happens again.
No.
JK, legend.
So, James, the United Rugby Championship.
Mate, it's thriving.
The URC. It does look good, eh? Some banging games.
It has. It's improved. Not that it needed to improve, but it feels like, well, it's stable.
Yeah.
That's what it feels like. It's stable and there's some decent teams firing some decent shots.
I had a few messages this week because I spent an hour hiding on Sunday in the bog watching Leinster Munster. Well, that was on a Sunday when the kids were downstairs and all this stuff. I got back late last night from Leicester, so I saved my hour on the bog this morning to watch some URC.
What did you watch?
Well, I watched Glasgow get absolutely hosed to start off with at Munster.
You say hosed?
In the first half.
First half, yeah. Absolutely blown
Munster
away.
Munster looked class, didn't they?
Munster looked very, very
Where's
good.
Where's Graham O'Rountree got this expansive rugby union from? He was the most unexpansive player, just fucking stamp on them.
Well, that's the issue,
the
Andrew.
The style they play, it's brilliant to watch, isn't it?
Well, they can't defend them all, though. Maybe that's what
it
is.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Graham Rowntree's out in the backs, just like doing offloads and balls out the back door. Yeah. But they can't defend them all. That's a story for another day. Glasgow, very good at them all, though. Yeah. But yeah, Munster. Don't forget that they won the URC last year.
You did forget.
I did forget.
Oh, yes, they did.
Oh, yes, they did. I did forget. I did say quality players. Mate, Jack Crowley, yeah. I'll go big on him at 10 as well. Stephen Archer looks very good at tight head. If they can get their maul defence right, which is becoming a real Achilles heel for them.
There's a lot of maul tries this weekend, though, in the URC.
Was there?
Yeah.
What stats you got?
Well, Edinburgh scored a couple.
Yeah, it's Scottish teams. We can maul to the cowsheds and back.
So did Ulster.
There you go.
You watch some of the highlights and it's just pick and go, try, maul,
Rob,
try.
Hits how many mauls are in
the highlights
URC.
Out.
No, Rob, go now, off the bat, how many?
43.
Yeah, there we go. It's a wild guess. Munster are good. They've got a wicked six as well. Tom Ahern, I think, got man of the match.
Yeah.
They produced him as well. Gavin Coombs, John Hodnett, loves a tap and goo as well. But Glasgow, fair play. They didn't die. They got absolutely hosed in the first half. Physically,
even
and
you exed or tweeted about it, didn't you?
Oh yeah, and then
the
they
peel
came
back. Is on.
Yeah, and then the peel back is on. Yeah. They came back in the second half and got a bonus point.
Yeah.
So Munster, I reckon they're the team to watch. I genuinely do, as well as Leinster.
How many other teams are you going to name?
Well, I'm not going to name Ulster. Mm. Got beat at home by hashtag always.
Hashtag always.
A massive
Edinburgh.
Massive rebound.
Yeah.
After getting beat at home last week against Benetton.
Yeah.
Ulster can't work them out. I don't know.
They'll be very disappointed with that Ulster because it's a game they'd have expected to win, even though Edinburgh are a decent outfit. But Stewart scored a couple again. Balakoon scored a late one. James Hume scored a late one as well for them to get the bonus point. Actually, two bonus points.
Because
so
on that,
as good
that,
as a draw that was for them.
There was only 3 points in it and Ulster scored at the end of the game. Look at that Ulster team. You've got Stephen Kitsoff, first start.
Stephen, get your kits off.
Exactly. Tom Stewart, you mentioned. Tom O'Toole, so you've got an international, Alan O'Connell, Kieran Treadwell, been there for an age. You've got Nick Timoney, massive fan of him. Matty Ray, who's been there for ages. John Cooney, Billy Burns, McCloskey, James Hume, who you're a fanboy of. Yeah. Stockhorse, Balakoon, and Will Addison. So, on paper...
Fully loaded.
Fully loaded. Absolutely fully
missing
loaded.
Henderson, though.
I'll tell you what, for hashtag always Edinburgh. So, Jamie Ritchie gets man of the match. Unbelievable.
You're welcome, Edinburgh fans. He came on the pod the other week.
He did. Hamish Watson.
Yeah.
Phenomenal when he came on. So
tough for Hamish, isn't it?
Oh, just, yeah. It almost feels like he needs like a refresh. I'm not saying that he needs to leave.
Needs to leave.
But you've got Luke Crosby, you've got Jamie Ritchie in the back row, as well as Bill Matter. But in terms of sixes and sevens, sevens and sixes. So Jamie's always going to play because he's Scotland captain now. Luke Crosby's young coming through. But Hamish Watson, strike when the iron's hot, mate.
Yeah.
If you're on the bench or you're kind of in and out, go and cash in, brother.
Yeah.
Because he was immense when he came on.
Will he play and stay involved with Scotland, Six Nations?
Well, this is the thing. I think he should do.
He's good enough, but then he's
well, we
at
said
Edinburgh.
He should have started, shouldn't we? That's what we said. He should have started against that must-win game
cash
against
in. Who needs
Ireland.
To, Saracens will probably find a way.
He turned Newcastle around. Rob, you fought 500 grand. That's what Hamish Watson would be costing. No, big shout out though to Edinburgh. Big win.
It's a massive win.
At the Kingspan, not an easy place to go. Ulster, interesting to see where they go this year.
Talking about Irish rugby teams, James. Connacht against Leinster. Mm. This is the one I spent a good bit of time watching today on the bog. What a game.
Yeah.
He's back. Return of the Mac.
He's back.
Return of the Mac.
Here he is.
He was on fire.
Yeah, quality player.
Actually, interestingly, I saw Jack Nienaber showing the entry to the ground when the Leinster arrived. I saw him and he's got his stern face on. And Connacht played a ridiculous game at times, scintillating. They were making breaks. The Big Mac was dominating. But then Leinster just found a way.
And what, the 89th minute
or
something?
Yeah, last play of the game to win it. And you like the sports ground was absolutely jumping. The atmosphere was banging. The rugby that was on show from Connacht and Leinster to a degree, but the tries that were scored, the breaks, you know, it was end-to-end stuff at times. Really good watch. Freezing cold. No win for a change, but it was brilliant. And Leinster just did what Leinster did. Youngish team. Harry Byrne at 10. Ben Murphy at 9. Like some youngsters. Jamie Osborne was on one wing. But one man that stood out for them, Charlie Nightight, in the centres, was class. Scores a try. Sets up another one with a kick. He was brilliant. You know, it wasn't Leinster's full-on noise team. They had Ty Furlong on the bench, Kean Healy. They brought a few on. Jack Conan was on the bench as well, but just snuck it
I tell you who's one to watch out for.
Go on.
I don't know where he plays. Kieran Frawley.
Yeah.
He's been spoken about for a couple. He's played centre as well, hasn't he? So yeah.
He's at 15 at the weekend.
15 at the weekend. Played 10 as well when he came on for Rossburn the other week.
Yeah.
I don't know where he fits into Ireland, but we scored the winning try at the weekend.
Good step as well. I thought he was going to give it for a two on the outside.
Yeah, look at us, across everything, across full Irish rugby. So, yeah, Leinster not won there in a long time. The Jacques Nienaber effect. Right, we've gone positive.
Oh, don't bring it down, James.
Let's not bring it down. It's bringing it to reality.
Yeah.
So the rugby's concussion case went to the High Court on Friday. The names were released as well of the players. Big names in there as well, not that they're big, little or nobodies. I mean, there was a lot of names on there, but the likes of Gavin Henson, Colin Chavis, Ian Goff, Carl Heyman, Mark Regan, Mo Botha, my former teammate, Sean Lamont, my former teammate, Phil Vickery, your former teammate, and a load of others have put their name to the case against World Rugby, the RFU, WRU.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I mean, look, we've had long conversations around this.
Yep.
I was quite emotional. Was it during COVID when we spoke about it? My mind has changed, not somewhat. I feel sorry for the guys that are involved.
I know, and that's the underlying emotion.
Because there's definitely people within that group that are going, this is an obvious thing, Goody, right?
No.
This is an obvious thing. Contact sport, the generation that we played in, the generation before, everything that's come out of the NFL now, everything that's come out of football, you see in boxing, contact sports, there's a danger linked to that.
Yep.
And we're part of that. Okay, so let's get that out of the way. But quite a damning number of people involved in that.
Yeah, and first and foremost, the litigation is around, did the RFU, the WRU and World Rugby have conscious knowledge of the knock-on effects of all the collisions, all the concussions that would lead to the serious brain injuries and issues that some of these people have got? And did they withhold that from the players? So that's ultimately the crux of it. Now, I look at it, and it's incredibly sad with what's happened to some of the people on the list, and we don't know all the stories. But I also look at it and I think, what are they trying to achieve? And they're obviously trying to achieve a payout to help them in life later on, you know, to help for support. And I suppose each one's different. What I do know is the game's the safest it's ever been in terms of how players are looked after. And that is always evolving and continuing. And it's, again, I go back to it, it's very sad with what people are dealing with, but I'm dead set against trying to sue the life out of the WRU, the RFU and World Rugby. It will cut the game at its knees if this happens. Where do you stop it? Is there an end point? I think of all the amateur players that have had other issues, but they don't have a voice necessarily. Difficult thing to talk about because you're very sad around the knock-on effects of it all.
Well, it's a real shame. So the lads that are struggling, we hope they get the support that they need to get through this.
You do.
Right. Let's finish off with a positive, a negative, and an ugly. It's the good, the bad, and the
ugly.
It is the ugly.
Yeah, let's do that, James. We're going to start off in Wales.
Yes.
Yes.
I know where you're going this.
Yes.
I know where you're going.
The Scarlets are getting a shout out in the good this week. There were 29-23 winners at Cardiff. Decent game.
14-0 down, I reckon.
Yeah. And then the red card comes.
Boom.
Yeah, and we'll get onto that in a bit as well. But yeah, shout out to the Scarlets boys. They're often in the bad. They've not had a good start to the season, so they get a mention. Over to France, Clermont beat Racing 23-18 at home. Big result for them against the big dogs of Racing. Stade Francais get a mention in the good as well. They dispatched Toulouse 27-12 on the Sunday night game. Great game that was. The Bulls over in Pretoria hammered the Sharks, as we spoke about earlier, 44-10. So a big shout out to the Bulls boys. Hashtag always Edinburgh.
Hashtag always. There we go.
They get a mention in the good. They won 27-24 at Ulster. So big shout out to the Scootsman up there. Benetton. Back in the good again.
Yeah, they're good. They are good.
Let's go, the Italians. Benetton, they beat the Ospreys 18-13. And their record now, and I cannot believe I'm saying this, opening seven rounds, played seven, won five, drawn one, lost one.
There you go.
Go on, Benetton.
Maybe it wasn't that big a loss for Edinburgh last week then.
You go back to the foundations, right? You put the foundations in at Benetton when you went about 14 years ago to do some content. It's just bearing fruit now, James.
Yeah, they're good. I like them.
There you go. What else is good? Marcus Smith and Harlequins get a shout in the good. They destroyed Sale 36-3. He certainly won the audition between him and George Ford. Saints get a mention in the good as well. They smashed Sarah. Didn't smash them. They beat Sarries at the Stone X. It was class, both sides of the ball, defence and attack.
Normally, they did smash them.
Yeah, they're in control, weren't they? Yeah, but they could have lost it towards the end. Mm. It was closer than it probably should have been. That shows the class of Saracens, though, when you're not having a good game to come back. Here's a stat for you, Jim. Saris have only ever lost 13 Premiership games at the Stone Axe. You played in about 10 of them. But of those 13 games, who's won there the most?
Gloucester.
Saints.
Is it?
Yeah, and that's the fifth win that Saints have had at the Stone Axe. Saris have only lost 13 Prem games at the Stone Axe, and Saints have nicked five of them.
Don't ask me to work out the percentage.
No, I won't. I won't. It's not half.
38.
It's not half, though, James.
I was guessing that.
Good effort, that. So, yeah, shout out to the Saints boys. Bristol's get a mention of the good this week. I was commentating down in Bristol. Colder than the North Pole, it was, basically. But they were very clinical. Gloucester, we'll talk about them in a second. But some sparkling performances from Bristol's. Great to see Vakatawa. He was on fire. Genji was tip-top. He had the bit between
his teeth. Who was the Fijian you were talking about?
Ravuvu. He is going to be class in the Prem this year.
Hell of a tash.
Yes.
Cheers, Rob. Thanks, mate.
I saw him in the tunnel on the way out. And I'm like, you look about 50, but you're playing like you're about 20.
Yeah. How quick. Yeah. He looked phenomenal.
Wheels. So, yeah, big shout out to the Bristol's boys. But the goo this week is going to one place, James Hamilton. You are repping it right now.
Okay, well, if I'm repping it, it's about being the best, is it not?
It's about being the best. And the best have won the goo this week. The Army, the British Army, and everything that they did for us last week. Whether it was the 34 Battery from 14 Regiment Royal Artillery, or it was the 7 Regiment Army Air Corps, or it was the rugby game, the under-23s beating the RAF, or it was the Royal Military Academy at Sandhurst, where we did the drill. Al Bab away at the drill, by the way.
Well, I was all right at the march. Left, right, left, to the right, salute. Goody marching like there's a German.
I was. And then the 2 Rifles hosted us for infantry training. Everything about that army, 2 days, apart from the alarm, and it wasn't the army's fault because we stayed in a hotel, the fire alarm went off at 1:30.
Shall I just show the fire alarm? So I'm refusing to get out of bed, and I'm like, Rob, what the fuck's going on? That's going off at 11:55, and I'm like, Rob, go and sort it out.
It was 1 o'clock.
It was 1 o'clock, yeah, was it? I didn't know. But Rob, you got out of bed, right?
Yeah, I sorted it.
And then, he sorted it.
Were you
it.
Breathing on the alarm?
No, we thought it was you vaping. That's what Rob said.
Did you actually?
Was Rob, someone vaping on the first floor?
I didn't get out of bed. I'm ringing Rob. I'm like, what the hell is going on? He's like, I think Goody's vaping. I was like, right, well, I'm getting back into bed then.
Anyway, there you go. The Goody this week goes to the Army. And my favourite person from the Army was Major Jen Stevenson. So big shout out to everyone.
Yeah.
Superstars, the lot of you. Keep doing what you're doing. Army,
be the best.
The bad few bits of bad. Montpellier, not Montpellier-poo. They're in the bad again. 8 losses on the spin now after being spanked at Bayonne. Newcastle, unfortunately, get a mention in the bad this week. 47-3 hammering at Tigers. Tough for them at the minute. And Alex Codling's interview spoke volumes. Issues there with Dave Thompson, the owner. Yeehaw. But we won't go there. The Dragons, they're back in the bad.
Yeah, saw that.
Of course they are again. They went out, though. They went out in Joburg because they only got spanked 49-24. So they kept it under 50, out in Joburg. But they're in the bad as well. Gloucester get a mention in the bad as well this week. They were shocking in
really
the first
bad.
Half.
They were really bad.
Oh, touch rugby, how are you? It's a West Country derby.
Bristol, off the back of losing at home to Leicester, so you think you get a reaction.
Yeah, and they were not the races whatsoever. Gutted. They did fight back and got a bonus point, but just it was bizarre in that first half for a Gloucester team that you think are going to have a bit about them in a local derby. So Gloucester get a mention in the bad. That's 6 defeats on the spin. But the bad this week goes to the court case and the litigation lawsuit that has gone to court to launch against the WRU, the RFU and World Rugby. Very sad what's happened to the players, but absolutely not the right thing to be doing, unfortunately. So that's why that gets the bad this week. Then the ugly, 2 bits of ugly. We're going to start off with Ruben Schumann's red card for taking out Ashton Hewitt for the Lions against the Dragons. But the ugly this week goes, unfortunately, to Ellis Jenkins, who I really like as a player, Ellis Jenkins. He's hard as you like, stacked, good player, but sometimes that spills over. And he got a red card for dumping Dan Davis on his nut with a tip tackle for Cardiff against the Scarlets. So Ellis Jenkins, he gets the ugly this week.
A couple of shout-outs, lads.
We have.
Yes, we have.
We're going to start off with Staff Sergeant Bestie, the PTI who ran around Sandhurst with you, Jim.
He did. Not an ounce of sweat on him. He had a dog in the office. He had like a French bulldog. Yeah. What's that all about?
The army, mate.
It was the army.
Be the best.
Be the best. Do what you want.
Did he carry around the course?
No, we were talking the whole way. He's a big fan of yours.
Were you like...
He was like, why is Goody not doing? He had some banter about throwing some gloves at you. or something Banter. When you were on the floor. No, he's a good lad.
Yeah, he's a good boy.
Staff Sergeant Busty.
Yeah. Big shout out to him. He's asked to give a shout out as well to Daventry RFC, where he started playing rugby as a kid, and the Royal Army Physical Training Corps, the Apostles rugby team. So Busty, or Staff Sergeant Busty, you're a legend. Good luck to you and Daventry and the Apostles.
Yeah, big shout out to you guys. Shout out to Matthew Smith, who's organised a touch rugby game on the pitch at halftime of the Glasgow Warriors Northampton in the Investec Champions Cup next weekend. They're raising money for men's mental health charity Keep In Touch. You can find them on Just Giving. Just search Matthew Smith.
Thanks, Jim.
Thanks, Goody. And thank you to producer Rob. Yeah, thank you to everyone.
Thanks for everyone for listening. Don't forget to check us out on YouTube as well, and make sure you subscribe on
Spotify. Rubby Spot.
Spotted Pod.